show that connects businesses in Kent to do business. Tweet us live
at Kent. Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to the bi-weekly Kent Biz Connect radio show, the show that connects businesses in Kent to do business. And we've got a guest co-presenter with us today in the form of the lovely Tracy Westall.
Good afternoon, everybody.
Tracy, good afternoon, and thank you so much for joining us today while Brian is away.
Yeah, so apparently sunshining himself somewhere in Majorca.
No doubt tuned in from the comfort of his poolside
lounger.
With San Miguel in hand, showing off to all his friends, this is my radio show. Well, going live at the moment, all the way from Kent. Anyway, if you're tuned in, Brian, hope you're having a lovely time and a relaxing break. We've got some fabulous guests with us today, Tracy, as well, haven't we, I believe. So why don't you tell us, who have we got in the studio today?
Well, we have today Simon from Morpheus Insurance.
Simon, welcome.
Hello, thank you very much for having me. Hello, everybody.
Hello. And also we've got Louis from Clear Channel.
I put you
Thanks
on the
for that marvellous introduction for your guests.
I put
That's
you on
great.
The spot there,
Clear
didn't
Channel
I, Tracy?
Direct, and she, yeah. You know, yeah. Yeah. Didn't know who was here, but thank you for having
well,
me.
This is That's Louis, my
fault. That's my fault. I am sorry. I put you on the
Drunk
spot
again.
There, Tracy. So, yes, we've got Simon Hammond from Morpheus Insurance Solutions, and we've got the brilliant Louis Campbell from Outdoor Media Specialist Clear Channel Direct with us today in the studio. So welcome to both of you. Tracy, there's lots going on, and we like to start the show with some kind of news and some kind of topical items.
Yes.
Is there anything that's kind of caught your eye this week in particular?
Well, as you know, I'm always looking out for businesses' successes and, unfortunately, with them, failures. And this week, one of Kent's travel firms, Buzzlines, great coach company that was down on the south coast, unfortunately went into liquidation last Monday. For those people that have booked holidays with them, then obviously this is going to be a really trying time for them.
Mm.
People say to me, you know, how can a firm still take payments knowing that they're going to go into liquidation? Well, sometimes they don't even know.
They don't know themselves.
Yeah. Exactly. So at the moment, I don't know who the insolvency practitioners are that are going to be dealing with that. But I do understand that somebody will be in touch with all those people that have booked holidays with the company in the future, near future. And I know that quite a lot of people have come forward to say that obviously their holidays have been ruined and their travel for certain trips have been ruined.
Mm.
And it is unfortunate, you know, in this climate, we seem to be having a lot of businesses, especially this one's the 30 years old. Mm. So it's not just a new startup, it has been a well-established business with 40 staff that have now unfortunately lost their jobs. So it is sad news from that part of the things. But
well, let's bring Simon in here. Simon, are people covered for things like that on their general travel insurance, for example? Would that kind of cover them for a firm going bust, or is that a kind of one of these force majeure things that can't be insured against, you know?
I'm not an expert. As far as I'm aware, they have to be ABTA in order to get some compensation. Mm-hmm. But as I said, I'm not an expert.
Okay, well, let's hope that they were ABTA or ATOL bonded.
I believe they were. And also another thing is that if you pay for something like holiday or any goods by credit card, usually the credit card company will insure you for anything after a loss of an insolvent company. So
right.
That is definitely something for people to bear in mind if you are looking to purchase anything that's substantial cost. But going on to some really good news,
right.
And I really love it when communities come together for a need of keeping their village together. I used to live in a village a while back and I loved the whole thing of village life. And the villagers of Ash, near Canterbury, have actually raised enough money to take over the Chequers Inn.
Mm-hmm.
So it is now a community pub. This pub is now run by the Chequers Inn Ash Society. And they've just really newly refurbished the pub. The doors have been open for the first time in almost 5 years. Mm. And as a village life, you know, pubs are very key places because that's where a lot of the community actually...
Drink beer,
mm. Yes. But also that's where they all come together. Yeah. And it's the same with village shops. And obviously in the news in the last sort of 10 odd years, village post offices decline. Mm. But it's really lovely to see that a group of people in their own area have mm-hmm. decided to come together. And they have obviously worked really, really hard because 300 residents have bought shares to help raise £400,000 to actually get this pub back up and running for their community.
Isn't it?
It is. It's a major investment. Yeah. And I'd like to congratulate all those residents in Ash. And may you be pulling pints and issuing gin and tonics for a very long time to come.
Louis and I are sitting here nodding at each other because that's very much our neck of the woods.
You're very local to us.
I can feel a meeting coming on.
Yeah,
a lunchtime meeting.
Exactly.
We'll go and give it our critique.
There you go.
Sometime
and
soon.
By all accounts... they've pledged that the menus are going to be of great quality food.
Oh, well.
And all the stuff's going to come from the Kent area.
Well,
so
we'll definitely be there then.
Not only are they supplying a great service for their local community, but they're also helping out other businesses within the Kent community to actually be suppliers for their restaurants. So well done, you guys. I really do love a good story like that. But back to bad news, I'm afraid. I know. It's like a roller coaster, this, isn't it? But I'm also very sad to see that the UK's oldest building firm, Ardertnall and Sons from Braestead, have actually ceased trading. Now, this Seven Oaks firm has been in the family and trading since 1591. So that is a very, very, very long time.
Is that Henry VIII's time, isn't it?
I think it's, yeah, Henry VIII, Elizabeth I. Yes. It's around that era.
Around about the sort of dissolution of the monasteries kind of time, way back then. Gosh.
Yeah. Wow, look at you with your history. Mm. and unfortunately with these things, you know, there's 100 jobs that are expected to be lost for this family-run business. But they've had some really great building contracts in the past. I mean, they've built Lido's in, I think it's Hackney, London, somewhere. They've been doing the Royal Pavilion Estate in Brighton and the Brighton Museum and Art Gallery.
Turner Contemporary, I think they built.
Yes, I was going to say, even our own Kent Turner Contemporary Museum. So, you know, it's really sad to see. And, you know, it's warning over cash flow problems. Mm. You know, and they needed additional funds to be injected into their business. I mean, I don't know the actual ins and outs of all of how that business was, but it's just a really sad thing to see that, you know, a really old, 400-year-old business has, you know, has unfortunately disappeared from business. So, yeah, it's...
Particularly if it's directly related to the fact that, you know, they... Well, it sounds a bit, they probably had business, but they weren't necessarily getting paid for it. And there's another big...
Well, it could be a lot of things. I mean, that's the big thing about insolvencies. Mm. I know that you had Adrian Dante on the show a while back, and I'm sure he'll concur that there are so many different reasons why a business will fail. Mm. But invariably, it's where your cash lies. If you have not got enough cash... you're not going to survive with your outgoings. Mm. And that's what it's all about at the end of the day. And it's just such a shame that there are some great, fantastic businesses that don't actually want to talk about cash flow.
Yeah.
And it's not a taboo subject at all. It's making sure that you're being really proactive to make sure your company is going to be sustainable and that, you know, you're in a position that you can grow. But it's making sure that you're not growing too fast. You're not making enough profit and that your cash flow's not being stifled.
So don't confuse cash flow with profitability because they're two fundamentally different things.
Well, it's the profit in the business, you know, that's making the business more viable. Mm-hmm. But a lot of businesses actually go, well, my turnover's fantastic.
Yeah, exactly.
My turnover X, Y, Z. Mm-hmm. But, you know, if your profit's rubbish... Mm. But yeah, Simon.
Well, no, I totally agree with you. And one of the main issues I think we have for any small business in the UK is late payments.
Yes.
Which is horrendous in the construction industry particularly. And that's why it's one of the hardest sectors to get trade credit insurance for as well. For,
yes, it is.
For just that same reason.
Mm. I mean, I know the government are really looking into the prompt payment code, which a lot of construction businesses have actually signed up to. And I was actually looking into this a couple of weeks ago for some work I was doing for somebody. And it's quite amazing that so many people are listed on that prompt payment code, but it's being held to account. And I really do believe that the government needs to be more strict on this because it is the larger businesses, and especially in the construction sector, the likes of the big boys out there really trying to hem down on what they're actually paying out for the subcontractors.
Carillion.
Well, Kier is another high-profile one at the moment that's teetering on the brink, isn't it, I believe. So,
you know, there's a lot of lot of businesses out there that really need to be held to account. But then you also, you know, in October we've got the VAT and the CIS issue for subcontractors. So that is really going to push the poor subcontractors and these smaller SME businesses to really hem down on their cash flow. And it is going to affect them quite substantially in some cases. And we're just really hoping that businesses are sort of planning ahead for that. Although it is only on the 1st of October that these changes are going to be come into play. So fingers crossed that some people are really all over that, because there's some great businesses out there and it's sad to see them go. But my final bit of good news in business, I know.
Thank God for that.
It's amazing. A fish restaurant in Gravesend is going to celebrate its 100th anniversary in 2020. I mean, this fish and chip shop has been continuously serving fish and chips and all them lovely other goodies that Chippy actually provides you since 1920. And it didn't even stop during the Second World War. I mean, that is just fantastic. And I mean, the TripAdvisor Hall of Fame, it has been number one for the last 5 years. And it has been a national finalist for the National Fish and Chip Awards 4 times. So if anyone's in that area, go and get your fish and chips from that fantastic shop. Because I know that they are going to be celebrating their centenary next year. And they have actually said that they're going to have loads of special offers and also parties for customers and a quiz night. So looks all good.
Brilliant.
Fish and chips.
There is one other bit of good news that we haven't mentioned, and that's about Manston. So as I understand it, as of last week, Manston is going to revert back to being a bona fide airport. Yes. Not just freight, but I think they also want to start passenger services again by 2022, which is great news. So all those multi-millionaire golf pros that are flying in for the Open next year at Sandwich will have someone to park their nice shiny private jets, won't they, which is good news. And hopefully we will all benefit from that at some point as well with the resumption of passenger flights. So I think that's a big thumbs up there in terms of the public consultation that's gone on. And, I mean, if you think about it, you know, if you imagine trying to build an airport from scratch today, you know, and how long that would take. So why on earth would you want to close one that's already there? It just doesn't make sense, does it?
And a bit of trivia, which might be out of date now, actually, but I was told a long time ago that Manston has the longest runway in Europe, and it actually used to be on board with the NASA space shuttle. So if it missed its slot to land back in the US, it would have actually landed at Manston Airport.
Good.
So a bit of trivia there for you folks if you're ever in a pub quiz.
Well, with space tourism all the rage and Richard Branson and people and Elon Musk getting onto that particular bandwagon, who knows, we might see some spacecraft landing at some point in the future. But anyway, that's all great news, and I'm sure it's going to be brilliant for the local economy as well in terms of job creation and everything else. So let's hope we get a nice high-speed rail connection now between Thanet and Ashford as well, and that would just kind of be the icing on the cake.
That would be the icing on the cake, most definitely. We definitely need some travel infrastructure from north to south of Kent, which I think would help everybody immensely.
Right, we've got some events we're just going to run through quickly, haven't we? We'll just do a quick fire on these before we talk to Louis, who's been fiddling with his microphone and now we won't be able to hear him because it's pointing at his lap. But
these
I'll turn it off, Louis, so you can move it again. There you go. Right.
Whilst he's fiddling with his microphone.
Stop playing with your microphone.
Yes, there is Origin Training. I'm actually going to be running a training session very soon. I've just opened this on your little thing and I cannot find any dates on it.
Okay, well, what they're doing, actually, is they're offering a consultation, aren't they?
Ah, right, okay.
So it's not a training session per se. What they've very cleverly done is said, look, as a business, you're probably well aware of the fact that some of your staff, at least, aren't 100% familiar with, you know, how they could be using Excel or Word or PowerPoint, whatever. So why don't you let us come in and we'll do a needs analysis and then we'll come back to you with a very simple recommendation.
That is a great idea.
Isn't it?
It is.
Rather than trying to sell a training course per se and me not knowing whether I need it or not, well, exactly. Come into my business, spend an hour with me, you know, look at what we've got and who needs what, and then kind of go from there. So,
well, yeah. You're making it more tailored for your clients' needs. So well done, Joanne, down there. That's fantastic.
So that's origintraining.com. All of this what we're reading out now is in the community section of Supply My Business, by the way. So you can, that's your kind of reference point for all of this. Christmas, Tracy, would you like to? I think you're the person that should talk about Christmas. I won't get away with it.
Right, OK. Well, Christmas, it's December the 25th.
A big man with a beard
comes down your chimney, which is quite frightening in this day and age. I'm looking... Where are you finding this on
this
your
thing? This has just been posted, actually,
Lynette
Wood.
Oh, right.
At the Ashford International Hotels. It's right at the very top.
Because I've not updated it.
You're like Brian. Oh. Brian doesn't... He struggles with that bit as well.
You're not giving me the right tools for the job here. That's, you know...
Basically, what they're doing is they're offering a free gift if you book your Christmas party with the Ashford International Hotel by the end of July, and that could be a complimentary room for the party organiser. It could be a drinks package for a table of 10, for example. That might be a bottle of wine or 5 bottles of beer. So they're looking for you to pay your deposit by the end of July to get your free gift. And to be honest with you, if you're not thinking about getting your Christmas party booked now, the chances are when you do think about it later on in the summer...
You'll be having it in January.
Exactly. Because that's how quickly it sells out. So act now. You may not want to, but that would certainly be our advice and the advice of Lynette Wood at the Ashford International Hotel.
Yes, if you quote Early Bird there as well.
Right. What's next?
Right, what's next?
Are you back on the page?
I am back on the page.
Okay.
In fact, I am going... to go for the Marsh
Networking
Business Network, which is one of your little jollies, I understand.
It's not me, it's Terry Botfield.
Good old Terry.
Terry. Well,
Simon knows Terry. Oh, yeah,
no, Terry. Hello, yeah. Terry, if you're listening. Yeah.
Have you been to his Marsh Breakfast Networking?
No, but I share it on Twitter for him.
Oh, fantastic. Well, this meeting includes a full English breakfast for a fee of £10. So, and all the contributions go to a local charity. Mm. I love this idea. Yes, it's fantastic. And so that is going to be on Thursday the 25th of July, 7:30 a.m. till 9:15 a.m. So you don't have to miss any of your working day there. But, yeah, if you go onto the Supply My Business website, all the information is there and you can book if you just follow the link straight there. And by all means, if you're going, please do take plenty of business cards with you because you never know who you're going to meet at these things and you could collaborate and network to your heart's content over a bacon boutique.
Brilliant. I've got another good friend of ours, Paul McCartney, who actually runs one of Brian's networking groups at Bromley, is running a business vision and planning workshop on the 18th of July. So this is a 2-hour workshop. It's limited to 24 people so that he can spend some proper time with you. And it's looking into things like, you know, what do you want to achieve from your business? How are you actually going to go about realising your vision for what you want your business to look like at some point in the future, for example. So very useful session, bite-sized session, from 7:30 to 9:30 in the morning. There is an Eventbrite booking link, and I think the tickets are just £20 for that. So what have you got to lose? If you're a business owner that's perhaps caught up too much in the kind of the day-to-day and doesn't really have time to think about what it is that they actually want from their business, get yourselves along to Paul's workshop. And it's at the Ashford International Hotel. And hopefully that will stimulate some thoughts and ideas for how to take your business forward.
Most definitely. Having a few hours out of your actual business to refocus, get some other ideas, can bring a whole new light to your day. Most
totally
definitely.
Agree. It's invaluable.
Yeah, I'm totally all over these breakfast networkings. There's one at the Marlow on Friday the 2nd of August. Mm-hmm. They're actually going to be partnering up with the Skinny Kitchen.
Oh, yes.
Who they're going to be providing some delicious breakfast canapes. Mm. Oh, wow. And also a lowdown on their new external catering offering. So that would be great. It's a relaxed networking. Chief Executive Deborah Shaw is going to be giving a great talk. Some super exciting plans for the next year. There are tickets available at the Marlow Theatre website. You can also find the link on Supply My Business. And yes, there's
I think
also,
it's £15 if you're not a business member.
It's got here with the code Sunshine19. And also they're offering a special ticket for the Little Miss Sunshine that evening as well. So contact the Marlow Theatre all through supplymybusiness.co.uk site and you can get your tickets for that then.
I think they're on the show as well in a couple of weeks' time.
Oh, well, I'm sure they're going to be talking all about that.
Yeah, yeah. So we look forward to that. They're obviously now a charitable trust, the Marlow. So they were owned and managed by Canterbury District Council. Mm-hmm. And they are now a trust in their own right, so run completely independently as a not-for-profit. So all of the ticket sales, everything gets ploughed back into the community, and it's a fantastic resource.
Mm.
And the Skinny Kitchen, just around the corner from the Marlow, is a fabulous little restaurant that obviously offers healthy eating, dining for people. So nice little pair up there. Yeah, good. Right, what else have we got? Is it my turn?
Well, you've got your event at the Ashford International on Wednesday the 17th.
Let's just do that very quickly then. So, again, Ashford International Hotel, Wednesday the 17th from 6 o'clock. It's our after 6 networking that the Ashford International run in conjunction with ourselves, the FSB and also the Kent MS Therapy Trust. It's always very well attended. Funnily enough, the Marlow Theatre were talking at that last month. But this month, Lynette is actually putting on some non-alcoholic cocktails for people.
Wow.
So a bit of a summer theme going on. Mm. Not your usual tea and coffee refreshments and water on the evening. We're actually going to have some non-alcoholic cocktails. So that's going to be absolutely gorgeous. There is an Eventbrite booking link again for that. So please do book on so that we know how many people to cater for on the evening. As Brian is tuned in, we really ought to mention his BBN networking meeting this week.
Yes.
Which is where?
Looking at this list here, it's at Bromley.
No.
No, hang on. No, we've had that. Sorry about that.
Dartford. So Dartford Football Club.
Well, he has so many. He has one at Maidstone Caseport, one at Dartford Football Club and one at Bromley.
One at Bromley.
And they're so well intended and there's some great, fantastic businesses that go to them. So
he won't thank us for this, but no doubt he is checking his emails from his lovely sun lounger by the pool in Majorca. And no doubt he has had a raft of last-minute cancellations because he always does, but he always obviously fills the spaces.
Oh, yes.
So if you did feel the need to go to Dartford very early this Thursday, 7 o'clock.
Send him a
tweet at Brian's BN on the Twitter and say, Brian, can you get me in, please? Martin's been on the radio, says you can squeeze me in, even though you're all the way over there in Majorca.
He's not going to like you for his new phone bill when he comes in.
Absolutely.
His mobile.
So we look forward to that this Thursday at BBN Dartford. Good. It's 28 minutes past 3.
Wow.
already. And we didn't even talk about the fact that the M20's been voted the worst motorway in England, closely followed by the M2. We're not even going to go there.
No.
What we are going to do is play some music, which will hopefully link us to our first guest. So we're going to invite our listeners today to see if they can make the link between this song and our first studio guest.
Stop going, the whole world shook. The storm was blowing through you. Waiting for God to stop this and up to your neck. In darkness, everyone around you was corrupted. Say something. There's no
well, I think we just gave it away then, didn't we? With the words advertising space. So no need for any kind of brain power on that one, Tracy. Louis, Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me here.
Louis from Clear Channel Direct. What are you guys laughing at?
Tracy's remembered where I'm from now. So
oh, okay.
That also is a good point, good starting point.
I'm just having a look at his Twitter account.
Well, thank you.
So, Louis, tell us in your own words.
Yes, Martin.
Who are Clear Channel? Who are Clear Channel Direct? What do you guys do?
Well, we're an outdoor advertising company, probably. We're internationally based, but also UK based and locally based, which is why, you know, I look after the Kent area with one or two of my other colleagues and even in towards London. But we're concentrating more locally. I live locally and we do effectively, you might have seen us, most people know of the bus shelters around in town. That's probably where people see us all the time, but then don't realise who it is that's actually looking after that type of advertising. But not only just that, we obviously have the shopping malls around as well. It's another one of our products that we do. Also that we do a lot of the billboards that you see around as well. So there's various things, phone boxes and also online stuff. We do a geolocate product. So various different types of products, whether it's static posters and also more and more now we're going towards digital.
Yeah.
Sainsbury's, Asda's, we look after as well.
Also sort of pubs and clubs.
Yeah, pubs and clubs.
Digital
we do
media
a lot of
there
digital
and
media. We do all the screens in a lot of the pubs and clubs around as well. So there's a lot of different types that we do.
Now, you've got a strap line, which I absolutely love.
I'm glad you like that.
I can remember it, so I hope you can.
I hope I can as well. Become locally famous, we're saying. Because it's not just about the national accounts and we look after some very big clients as well, but people don't realise. I think there's this perception of, wow, that's going to cost me a fortune, which is not really the case. There is a lot of very cost-effective medium that we do that you can actually.
So the emphasis is on targeting today, I guess, isn't it, ultimately, and being able to say, okay, I'm a small business and I want to generate awareness and interest in this catchment area.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, the thing is, it's all about understanding your audience. What we try and provide is the audience. It's not a case of we do this and we're selling this particular. Everyone's trying to find a particular audience that they're trying to market to. We can find that audience for you because the exposure of outdoor advertising now, we are up to about 98% exposure now that people are looking at this outdoor medium on par and sometimes better than television. And what you're doing, we have all the stats and everything that's there. So it's really a case of understanding your business. What is it you're trying to achieve? We try, again, do a fact-finding analysis. It's a consultative way that we do, we work, and we effectively say, who is it you're trying to target? We've got statistics and stats that would cost small SME businesses thousands to obtain, and we have that already. We can give that to you and say, this is your audience, whether it's a demographic, an ABC one, and we analyse that first of what you're trying to do. It has to fit in with what you're trying to do as part of your marketing strategy. We're not saying this is going to be your only thing you're doing. Whether it's radio, whether it's you know, local newspapers, whether it's other forms of advertising you're trying to do. But it becomes part of what you're trying to do. But it is a cost-effective way of trying to get across. And especially with the stats now, it's not finger in the air anymore, hoping that someone's going to ring you. We can actually say, this is the type of people that are going to walk past that bus shelter. This is the type of people that are going to go past that billboard. We have a creative department that, again, would cost you a lot of money if you're going to try and do something very creative.
Right.
We can send it off and give you free mock-ups to give you an understanding first of how that's going to look.
So you can provide the whole solution.
The whole solution.
Because in the bad old days of advertising, obviously, when I worked in the business, as it were, in London, it was all sort of big expense accounts because that's kind of how the business worked. And, you know, you'd have a big client spending, I don't know, we didn't used to bother with them unless they were spending sort of upwards of 10 million a year.
Yeah.
A media agency would take typically 10% as the planning fee on that. Then you'd have the creative agency who would take a monthly retainer fee plus an execution per, you know, whatever it was, weekly press rollout. So, I mean, they really were coining it in quite literally.
I mean, don't get me wrong, there's a lot of media agencies that I deal with and we still deal with, don't get me wrong, that it's there, but there is a lot of people, even small SMEs now, that can't afford to do that and want to come direct. So we're giving that advice, unless you're getting the personal advice as well, to explore what you can and cannot do. And if it's not right for you, we will tell you that. There are times that we say, look, don't spend your money with us because you're going to need a little bit more money to spend to make it effective. If it's a case that you need to go and put it somewhere else, we'll tell you that, because there's no point you burning your bridges with us spending money if it's not going to be effective for you. But we'll analyse that at the beginning. But you're absolutely right. There are big agencies still out there.
And there's still a role for that.
Absolutely,
because, you know, media has fragmented so much today that, you know, there's no way that a national organisation could possibly have its finger on the pulse when it came to every single opportunity and kind of niche medium
and as you
to
know,
advertising.
With the social media as well now, it links into everything what you're trying to do. You have to look at the overall strategy of what you're doing. Some people, they don't understand social media and how that works, which is not a bad thing, because we're getting swamped with everything now. Things just change, online advertising, whether it's Google advertising, you're buying it like a commodity now. That could cost you a fortune alone. Radio advertising, are you getting as good radio advertising as well as bad, but are you actually getting the right slots where you're supposed to be? Are you getting the right statistics? Those are all the stats.
Well, that's what I love about what you do, because, you know, back in the day, we used to plan on the basis of, you know, A, B, C, 1, D, D, 1, D, 2, E.
Yeah.
You know, and it basically everything was A, B, C, 1. That was your kind of target demographic.
Yeah, which is
just
now.
Yeah, I mean, now you can actually tell a small business locally how many people of what type walk past a given site on a given day of the week. I mean, you can even target it by time of day, day of week.
And that's all independent statistics that we get. It's not just us trying to say this is our information. We've collected that from various and research companies that have done it for us. So it's independently obtained, which at least gives you a bit more credence, and it's updated all the time, which I said that can cost a lot of money to obtain for any business trying to market and obviously trying to promote their product. So that is there, and happy to give that to, and obviously I'm an advocate of, because I live in Kent, I want small businesses to grow. I've been in advertising before, where it was the BT phone directories, online advertising. I've been self-employed, I've run my own website. I know what's happened over the years, and things they just change all the time. But the one thing that hasn't changed but has got more profound with the statistics, might think it's Big Brother, but at least we know the audience now and all the stats are there.
And I can buy it by sight on that level. That's the key thing. You know, I don't have to
buy in blocks for run. I mean, I've got clients now that, yes, we're doing really well. We're having a fantastic year. And when I speak to clients as well, I do try and say to them, look, we're booked up 2 or 3 months in advance on certain products. You have to talk to us now for three or 4 months in advance.
So that hasn't changed.
But the good thing is with that is that there's always going to be something that we can find for you, and then at least let's have that business conversation.
I couldn't agree more, because I think when times are good, that's the time when you should redouble your marketing efforts.
Totally agree. That's where small businesses go down. They actually, when they're doing really well, we've all seen it before in the past, they go, I don't need anymore. Don't need to advertise anymore, market my product anymore. We're doing fine. Then all of a sudden, 2 or 3 months later, it goes quiet. Well,
the
what's
sales
happened
funnel's
there?
Kind
what's
of
happened?
Dried up.
It's because you haven't constantly been, I'm not saying you need to do all the time, it depends what market sector you're in, what type of business you're in, but you have to have that constant branding, and we wouldn't have national companies coming to us that are booked out for the whole year, because they understand that. They understand that it has to constantly be in the public eye. So there's always this misunderstanding of how you should run your business and on the marketing side. But when you've got years of experience with different types of advertising, whether it's on or offline, you can at least try and offer that. And for me, I'll rather give someone some advice, small SMEs, and say, look, been there, done that, seen it. It's up to you what advice you want to take. Like, even if it's this product or another product, what is it you're trying to do? And we're happy to help local businesses.
I just wanted to say, obviously, you're really trying to help the SME market. And a lot of people think, do you know what, the likes of Asda, Sainsbury's, whoever, these big, big players, around there, it's going to be really expensive. Do you do packages and that for
Yes,
SMEs?
Absolutely. I mean, that was one of the things we've really tried to push this year. Depending on the length of time you're going to advertise, yes, we have a various amount of discount we're going to give. But mm-hmm. we've already compiling four Kent businesses. I'm already coming up with various packages now to help small SMEs to basically kickstart them and say, look, this would normally be this. Let's try and help you, get you underway. It's like when you first start your business, you're looking, again, like you said before, your cash flow is king.
Yeah.
You're thinking, where am I going to put my money? What am I going to do? Yes, I know I need to do this, but I don't have the money.
Yeah.
So we're trying to help small SMEs to say, look, you can start with a smaller package. Obviously, it's got to be effective.
Yes.
There's no point taking your money and then nothing's going to happen. No advertising is guaranteed. If anyone tells you that, then they're lying. But at least now, as I said, we got the stats. You got more of a chance of getting a response back with the audience
and
all the stats that we know.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, we've got some small packages we're getting together now for small SMEs, and more than happy to talk to people and say, look, let's try and help you to do that.
I mean, to be honest, a lot of the emphasis over the last few years has been about advertising on social media. And that has been a really, really big push. But not a lot of people are on social media, even to this day.
Correct, correct.
So if you're actually trying to target a specific age range or what have you, then, I love it when I go up and down the tubes and I look at all the different posters that are up. Some of them I don't quite get, don't understand the meaning behind it. But the others, I thought, do you know what, that really made me laugh. And I remember it. But it's because I'm going up and down an escalator.
Yeah.
We're not all plugged into our phones all the time. And a lot of the time, I have to say, if I keep getting Google pop-ups, it really is annoying because I'm actually looking for something specific. Yeah. But I think that being old school, should I say, really?
Well, I think you've kind of identified another problem as well with in particular with something like Google AdWords, for example.
Fortune.
Yeah,
it's like commodity, bro. One, you've got to know what you're doing. You've got to spend a lot of time on it. And depending on the words that you're buying, you're like commodity broking on the stock market.
Exactly.
All of a sudden, you could have an X budget 1 week. You say, right, I'm going to allocate this amount this week to it or this amount this month. Your monthly budget could be gone in 2 or 3 days, depending how much it fluctuates every day. The prices go up and down.
Yes.
It's a bit like buying DIY. Like B&Q or DIY, guess how much that would cost you to have that word up on the search engines? Mm. It's a minefield.
And it tends to be dominated by the much bigger players.
Absolutely.
So in terms of accessibility for, the kind of the businesses one tier below that, it's the reality is it's not accessible. Yeah. And then, of course, you can spend, just as much time on, organic search engine ranking efforts and everything else. But again, as Google prioritise more and more paid for search results, the less chance of your business actually appearing in that anyway. So it's difficult for advertisers to kind of know where to.
I think that's where a lot of them as well, because it's changing all the time. Unless you're keeping up to date with everything, it's very hard to understand it all and thinking, am I making the right decision here? Where am I putting my money?
Yeah. But what you're offering, though, is something quite tangible. Your ad that looks like this with this message will be on this poster site, on this bus shelter, or at this supermarket.
And don't forget the digital
for 1 month.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And it's whether you want it static or whether you want a digital advert where you can become more creative.
Yeah.
It's more and more we are putting more digital plant in it. It will be going that way, don't get me wrong, because people interact more. If you've got a 10-second advert that's going on, visually, it's better.
Mm-hmm.
But you can have both. There's arguments for both in what we're doing.
Yeah, of course. It's never one or the other,
so there's plenty of options. There's plenty of options. And SMEs, once you get to understand it a little bit more, is within your reach.
Yeah. Well, in many ways, the more the smaller it is as well, in terms of campaign, the easier it is to quantify in terms of what it's delivered.
And also, because, Martin, those SMEs would be the next big business 5-10 years down the line. You never know, do you? So they're going to come from the SME market. The other big boys are going to start, looking at that. And where did they come from? They came from a small business growing, and that's what people keep forgetting. You never know. There's how people
room
develop.
To grow. Mm. And that's the big thing. Mm. And the thing is the SME market is our UK economy. Mm. You took all the big players out. We're looking at figures of SMEs being the highest employers. Mm. Mm. You know, giving an SME the opportunity to actually discuss with somebody like you the fundamentals and how easy it is and actually how inexpensive it can be to be advertising in the same format as a big player in the world of industry, then it's most definitely worth to give you a shout and have a chat because, you know, people could be thinking that they're missing out on something because they're already thinking I'm priced out of that, but not necessarily so.
Yeah, but you work with charities as well. It's not just businesses talking about.
We work with charities as well. We've got a number of charities that Macmillan and, you know, Cancer Research and there's a lot of local ones that we're working with as well. So we try and give something back as well. We got a lot of, I've recently just done a church that wanted to promote opening a brand new church.
Yeah.
And so we've
I mentioned one of our sort of collaborators earlier on, the Kent MS Therapy Centre, which is a therapy centre based specifically in Canterbury. Mm. You know, and again, they have a need to kind of communicate what they do on a very local level.
Yeah.
So, you know, you can bring it right down to that, can't you, in terms of that very localised catchment.
Localised things, whether it's foster care and we're doing.
And you can look at drive times.
Absolutely.
And you can say, okay, realistically, you know, there's a drive time of 20 minutes max for a day centre like that. So that's our catchment.
Yeah.
You know, and then it becomes quite real, doesn't it? Because then you just map that in terms of, okay, what are the opportunities available? And then you can target that at the kind of individual site level.
And there's case studies that we've got all over the country because UK and international, we can, if you said a certain sector, we'll find a case study. Mm. Well, we've done that before and say what worked, what didn't work. Mm-hmm. And then you learn from it as you go along and say, look, that worked, we changed that. Mm. And then that's benefiting anyone going forward in the future because we've already done the case studies on it. Mm-hmm. So it's all there. Mm. It's quite mind-blowing, really, how much information that we've got.
Yeah.
You know, and the things that you can find creative-wise, as I said, the research, the stats and everything, it does make it a little bit more, less guesswork.
Yes.
What you're doing,
and actually, it's because there is, you know, there is the kind of benchmarking there. Mm. Pretty much anybody should be able to kind of pick that up and get their heads around it and kind of implement it in their business.
Yeah, and we have one of our sites that we just give to clients to look at, clearchanneldirect.co.uk. If anyone goes onto that, everything's on there. Mm. It shows all examples. It shows everything that we do. We don't go out. We don't even need to go and present our products. We say, there you go, have a look.
Yeah.
And we get a lot of inquiries from that because we put as much on there as we can to let people see, to understand it, because it's about being understood. You've got to understand first before, you know, people can understand you. So you've got to understand what is there first of all. So we try and offer that without being pushy, because we don't need to, really.
So if I want to have this conversation with you...
Yeah.
How does it work? Do I ring the kind
quite
of the head
easy.
Office number?
Quite
because
easy.
You've got a depot in Dartford.
We've got a depot in Dartford locally, which is fine, where, you know, we've got all of our tech drivers that put everything up and you know, all the posters and everything else, and we have an office there as well that deals with everything. But if you go to our site, clearchanneldirect.co.uk, you can ring direct from there, and that gets filtered down into the regions wherever the inquiry comes from.
And then they will quite happily ask you to come out and visit me at my premises, kind of take the brief initially, as it were.
Normally what we do is once we get the inquiry, we contact them and find out what they're looking for.
Mm-hmm.
Happy to go out and visit them on a site visit. Sit down, have a consultation with them and say, right, tell us about your business. Get to understand that. Then we go away and come up with
a plan.
A plan to say, look, from your brief, this is what we can offer you. This is the best solution for you. Then they can decide from there.
Mm-hmm. Superb. So, I mean, what have you got to lose? You know, it's...
Nothing as far as, you know... What's the price of a phone call?
Exactly.
I always say this. What's the price of a phone call? If it's something after a conversation... Actually, this isn't for me, then fine, but you've already found out.
Yeah.
But if you phone somebody up and say, I'm really thinking about this, I'm really not too sure, phone an expert. I, you know, get an expert, have a chat, costs nothing.
Yeah.
And you'll never know. You might end up getting something fantastic for your business out of it. One phone call.
Yeah. Particularly if you really are struggling to kind of put your business on the map locally. Because, you know, digital, for example, in terms of Google and maybe Facebook advertising and everything else we were talking about, isn't actually accessible to you.
No.
You know, you've got to think of another way, haven't you?
Yeah.
And there's lots of brilliant businesses tucked away on industrial estates, but I wonder how many people actually know they're even there.
Outdoor advertising is very high exposure, as I said. You're getting to 98% of the public every single day. You're going to see it. You're going to see it at some point when you're driving along, you're seeing something, and it's there. It gives you that sort of, that's sort of what we call power of posters, really, because it is, it's in your face, as they say.
Brilliant.
You're going along. Not literally, but there we go.
Larry, thank you so much for
that.
That has been very enlightening, and I'm assuming that you don't have an expenses account, which...
unless you want me to buy some donuts next time I come in. I hear they all go every time
someone
presents
here.
But on a serious note, I think, you know, those days are gone. And even the big agencies today don't really run their business that way. Everything is so much more accountable today. And so what you guys are doing for businesses on a local level fits with the times in many ways, doesn't it? You know, that's what it's all about, value for money.
It is about value for money, but also I think a lot of people are not jumping in with both feet and going, actually, I've just got something I didn't want. They're a bit more, you know, conscious about that. But I still think that just chat to somebody. If you think there's like something to go, you know, road to go down, then a phone call and a chat, you know.
I mean, on a very basic level, if there's a road that, you know, is near your office, and you want to advertise your business and get people to turn left at the next junction.
We'll have something there for you to promote yourself.
I mean, you know, McDonald's are great at that, aren't they, for example?
That's,
you know, they always have
300 yards.
Exactly.
Turn left.
Exactly.
500
yards. There's no reason why your business can't be doing that as well. So that's the key message. Brilliant.
Thank
you so much for that. Do stay with us for the remaining third of the show. What we're going to do is we're going to play a bit more tunage, which hopefully will provide a suitable introduction to our next guest. And once again, it's over to you, listener, to see if you can work out the link.
Sometimes you
Kent Biz Connect. Tweet us live at Kent_biz.
Well, welcome back, everybody. And for those of you who don't know, that was a song called Protection by Massive Attack and Everything But the Girl. And it may be a little bit too old for some of our listeners to kind of remember, but I think it leads us nicely into our next studio guest, Simon Hammond from Morpheus Insurance Solutions.
Hello, Martin.
Simon, lovely to have you back in the studio.
Nice to be here, thank you.
It's been a while.
It has.
And I know you're a busy man, so thank you for taking the time to come and see us.
That's all right, thank you.
Insurance, I think it's fair to say, is one of those kind of, you don't know the value of it until you need it.
Necessary kind of evil, products. I think they call it, don't they?
Yes. Yeah. So tell us, what do Morpheus do, and what's kind of different about you as an insurance broker in the marketplace? Where do you kind of set your stall out?
Well, I think the clue's in the name, actually. Although Morpheus was a character in the Matrix trilogy of films, is actually the Greek god of sleep from several thousand years ago. And there's a saying that goes back that long, that rest easy or sleep easy in the arms of Morpheus. So we're all about providing peace of mind, trust and certainty. And I think the difference we hold over maybe some other larger insurance brokers, we're very quick to respond. No big call centres, no faceless departments or anything like that. We build personal relationships, in fact, so close that a lot of them love telling us their life stories, which is great because we like listening. It's fine. And we build up long-term relationships with these people, and we'll just go the extra mile. But by that, I mean we've had circumstances in the past where claims technically shouldn't have been paid, but because of the strength of our relationship with the client and insurer, we've actually got them paid. And that's really where the trust and peace of mind comes into things. Because the one thing that a client wants is that when the stuff does hit the fan, that the claim's going to be paid.
Yeah. And that's so in many ways, and that's sort of very old school insurance kind of values, isn't it? And things that people bought into on a kind of trust relationship kind of level.
Absolutely. And I think
so if I gave you the nod, in other words, and, you know, I just bought a new car or something and at an auction and you were there in the crowd and I gave you the nod, in other words, you know, I need it insured because I've got to drive it home.
That's a tremendous analogy. I don't know if I'd be there, though, but that's the only
thing.
Could
I take that as being
if
read?
If it was your business, Martin, yeah. Yes, all day long. That's exactly what we're about.
Right.
And the trouble is nowadays is that people look at insurance as very much a commoditised product, money supermarket, confused.com, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But for us, and I think a lot of clients that we look after, appreciates that insurance is one of the very few products that protects your assets, your income and your liabilities. And we just treat it with the level of importance that deserves.
And in many ways, I guess insurance is an asset, and people should view it that way rather than as a cost.
Well, exactly. I mean, if you're looking to protect your business or yourself, then it's exactly what it's there for.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. Well, what's really interesting, I think, in the marketplace at the moment is the emergence of some very specific insurance products. And I know you're very good at talking about these as well. We were talking about cyber insurance before we came on air. And I think, Tracy, you were saying that you've just taken out a cyber policy.
We've just taken out a cyber policy. It's just one of them things that we hear a lot about. And the more and more that we rely on our IT systems and everything to keep the business running, we just thought it was and in all honesty, I mean, we do have our insurance with Morpheus. And it was just that I was discussing it with one of Simon's team. I thought, you know, I really need to have a look at this. And then I thought, you know, it's probably a really good idea to get this cover. And the thing is with the insurance is you might not need it, but one day you will, you know. And if you're not covered for it, then you're going to really know what impact that has for you.
So what eventualities does that cover you for example, in your business? What were you specifically looking to insure against?
Well, just basically making sure that we were doing the right thing within what we were doing, because a lot of insurance policies these days, you have to do certain things to make sure that your policy is, you know, is up and running properly, and that if an occurrence comes, that you've got proof that, yes, I've followed the protocol and this still happens.
So you're handling sensitive information on behalf of your clients because you're a...
It's personal data.
Yes, it's personal
a credit
data.
Management company.
Yeah, it's personal data, mm-hmm. more importantly. But it's also the fact that our business, as in many businesses, are run on an IT spec. So we don't write everything down in books or anything and got great big filing cabinets and stuff. It's all on an IT system. Mm. So if something was to happen to that...
Right.
Then obviously that's going to really impact your business from its day-to-day working. So it also covers various aspects of that as well. I mean, I know that, for instance, cyber crime is a new thing.
It's really. the fastest growing crime in the world.
And it is the fastest growing crime, and exactly. And I just felt that, bearing in mind what we were covering, in fact, the cyber crime element of our insurance package wasn't a lot more.
Right.
So, to my mind, it was worth.
Because it could sink your business if you didn't have cover for it.
Well, it's very refreshing to hear that from my point of view, because a lot of SMEs that we talk to only hear about the bad news stories, like BA, for example, who've just had that large fine, and they assume that it's the big companies that are being targeted by the cyber criminals, and it really, really isn't. It's the small business. It's the private individual that's being targeted, because we're low-hanging fruits to these people. We are far easier to target than multinational companies.
Definitely. And it's like, you know, you get a whole bunch of people or small businesses that are not protected, then, okay, they might be taking 1,000 here, 1,000 there. But if they do that for thousands and thousands of SMEs, then just one hit on a big company where they probably have massive firewalls and everything else and have that infrastructure behind them, they won't probably get as much money as hitting that lower hanging fruit, as you say. So, you know, it is most definitely...
there's two sides to it, I guess, aren't there, with the new GDPR regulations. One is the... Is it the Central Office of Information, or is it... I always get the initials wrong. It's the government, the regulator for
ICO.
Information Commissioner's Office. That's it. I always get them muddled up, those initials. So the ICO are kind of going to come down on you if there's a data breach in your business. But at the same time, if there is a data breach in your business, it's probably because someone's trying to extract money from your business and holding it to ransom, for example, you know, through some malicious software or an email or whatever it might be.
Exactly.
So you're going to take a double hit there.
Right.
And as I say, you know, it was something that came up in conversation and a few networking groups that I'd been to and everything. And I thought, you know what, I'm going to ask a question. And there's me, in all honesty, thinking this is going to cost me a load of money. Do you know what? It wasn't that much more on top of what my premiums I was paying for my other insurance. So, you know, again, ask the question. If you're up for renewal, ask a question on all these other little added.
Can I add that on?
Yeah, because, you know, invariably there's probably an insurance company there that will do the whole thing and it will only cost you a small proportion more, but it's a lot less than losing your entire business over.
Okay. So before we come on to talk about maybe some of the other specialist products that are out there, let's talk about the bread and butter in the kind of business world, because we're talking about public liability, professional indemnity. What exactly, what do we mean by that? What are they? Because they're quite different things,
they
aren't
sound
they?
Similar, so, don't they?
They sound similar.
No, they're very different. No, exactly. Professional indemnity is where your client perceives that they've suffered a financial loss as a result of your breach of professional duty. So that could be incorrect advice, errors or omissions, that sort of thing. But if you want to put it in layman's terms, it's cock-up cover.
Right.
And we all make mistakes. Well, we do. Yeah. We all make mistakes.
But how easy is that to prove in practice from an insurance point of view?
If you're an architect, it's quite simple. You've provided an incorrect plan and the job fails for that reason. Or it could be something that you've omitted to do for a client that was key to a contract.
Right.
A lot of people think that it is only for architects or surveyors, and it really isn't. It's for any professional practice, anybody who gives advice or anybody who specifies materials, who doesn't necessarily do design. So it's very wide-ranging. And public liability, bit different from professional indemnity. That would be if you cause injury or damage to third parties. So, for example, we obviously have public liability. So I'm in your lovely studio, Martin. Mm. We're shuffling around the table and I trip you over and you break your ankle. Mm. Then you're perfectly entitled to claim against me because obviously I've caused the injury. And, you know, and I might knock over your Ming vase because I know you have Ming vases at home.
We often talk about the Ming vase, don't we? Yes. Okay, right. So, okay, so basically it ensures you to be on someone else's premises in the event that something untoward happens.
Yeah, if you damage property or you hurt someone during the course of your duties.
Yes, okay. So they're kind of must-haves really, aren't they? Okay, so you obviously you do, you work on that level. And in fact, I've got my public liability and professional indemnity insurance with you as well, which I've had from sort of day one. But what do you do outside of the kind of the business space, as it were? What do you do for me as a householder, for example? Is that an area that you work in as well?
Very much so. Mm. But again, it goes back to what I was saying earlier about people looking at insurance as a commoditized product. To be perfectly honest with you, if you've got a very normal type house, most people are going to go online to arrange their insurance, and you know, good luck to them. You know, if that's what they want to do, that's absolutely fine. Where we can really add value though is where there's a slightly bigger property, maybe you might have some art on the wall, I don't know, maybe Ming vase, obviously. Martin, when it's maybe a larger property, that sort of thing, that we can,
or
definitely
personal items, I guess that's where it starts to
expensive
get
items of jewelry, items of art.
I remember when I had my wife's engagement ring insured a couple of years back, reinsured I should say, because it had been revalued, you know, and I couldn't believe how, you know, we all need to keep track of, you know, items of jewelry, for example, because of the price of gold.
Right. And my best advice to anyone who arranges their own insurance is get your phone, walk around your house whilst you've got the video on your phone, and talk into your phone and just say, oh, this is the lounge, this is my Sony TV, it cost X, this is the three-piece suite, we paid this for it however long ago, into your bedroom, open up the wardrobes, these are my clothes, and then once you've done all of that, and it will only take a few minutes, it won't take long, literally WhatsApp it to a friend, so then you've got it stored off-site, and then if the worst comes to the worst, and obviously something bad happens to your property and a loss adjuster comes to see you, you've got a physical record of what you've got, an inventory. Yes. And it's so easy and quick to do.
Golf clubs. You know, you and I both play golf.
I mean, try to.
It's we'll amazing be lost how, without them, Martin.
Amazing how much
we'll
money
has been... We'll be able to find you every day now.
...ploughed into that bag over the years. Yeah, you just don't realise. You lose track of it, don't
you? That's right. Yeah. That's right. It's easily done.
Okay, that's a really good point. And I think certainly what I've noticed, as you said, you know, commoditization, I think, is rife across many, many industries today. And, you know, your Google AdWords is a classic example of how Google have commoditized, you know, a marketplace, whether it be, you know, legal advice or accountancy, for example. You know, professional services on that level, if you did any kind of search for a solicitor in Maidstone or a firm of accountants or whatever it is, it would be dominated by a kind of a Google AdWords
the experts,
search result.
The experts in pay-per-click with the deepest pockets.
Exactly. So I totally understand what you're saying. And certainly when I get my insurance renewals through these days, it seems to be very templatized.
Yes.
In terms of, you know, it's up to this, but it's not specific about anything in particular.
No,
you know, exactly. It's just very generalized.
It is. I mean, we do email out an awful lot, as you can imagine, like most professional services companies do. But the one thing we endeavour to do is to pick up the phone and speak to every single client every year at renewal, just to maintain that maintain that relationship, and B, check for changes.
And the important thing there is, I'm not sure how many people are aware of the legislature that changed back in 2015, was it?
2015, the Insurance Act.
And your obligation as a buyer of insurance to actually make sure that your insurance provider has got all of the relevant information pertaining to that policy.
Absolutely. The duty of fair presentation, I think it is. Well, this is where a good quality insurance broker can add value, because the onus is also on us to make the necessary inquiries and to ensure that the client has spoken to their senior managers, mm-hmm. their co-directors. So it really is presenting the risk, if you yeah. like, in the completest possible light for the underwriters yeah. so there's no wriggle yeah. room.
And then let's say you have business premises, for example, and they haven't been revalued or your stock hasn't been revalued or whatever it is that you're trying to insure against, you know, the loss of.
Yeah.
And then you go to make a claim and actually you realise that, you know, the cost of replacing that stock or that item, but yeah, it's gone up exponentially. Policy doesn't cover you.
Well, it has slightly changed actually for the better over the last few years in that under insurance clause as such, that you're seeing less and less of that now, and there is greater flexibility from insurers over sums insured, and that would also then follow on from that client presenting their business to the broker correctly, the broker presenting the right. client's business to the insurer properly, mm-hmm. and that's where you do get a little bit more flexibility.
Right. But you use the key word for me there, which is presenting.
Yes.
Now, you can't do that online.
No.
You can't present something to an automated system online 100% accurately.
Of course you
it's
can't.
Just not going to happen. So you can't. Need to be able to speak to somebody like you and say, Simon, you need to come into my business. I need you to understand it.
Of course.
I need you to walk around the shop floor. I need you to walk around the offices so that you can help me make a fair assessment.
We are very happy to do that and enjoy yeah. doing that
yeah,
as well.
Yeah, and that's the important thing. Good. Let's move on, move back to those kind of very specialised products, because you wrote me a brilliant blog a couple of weeks ago, which was all about personal guarantee insurance.
That's right, yes. Yeah, a very little known piece of insurance that is available. In very brief summary, don't want to bore people too much with it. If a company director is wanting to take out asset finance, business loan, commercial mortgage, etc., and the lender requests or requires a personal guarantee, there is an insurance facility that can cover up to 80% of that personal guarantee amount. Obviously subject to underwriting, credit score, type of lending, whether it's secured or unsecured, etc. It's very good from our point of view to actually talk to people about personal guarantee insurance, because insurance traditionally is a passive product and it only reacts when there's like a fire or a theft or a storm or something like that. But the great thing about personal guarantee insurance is that it can enable that lending, that finance to be done, because the company director wants to grow his business. That will hopefully mean more staff at some stage. The lender obviously wants to lend. That's how they earn their money. Various intermediaries in the chain, accountants, lawyers, insurance brokers, obviously looking to earn some fees. But the most important person in the whole chain is the spouse at home. So when the company director goes home and says, great news, I've got that finance facility I was looking for, 9 times out of 10, the spouse will say, over my dead body, are you putting the house on the line?
Right.
But then the director can then say, well, great news, there's an insurance product now that can largely protect the personal guarantee.
So I'm slightly kind of in the dark here, because we've always had sort of secured and unsecured lending. And secured lending in a business sense traditionally has been against the value of a property, I guess, or something like that.
Yeah.
But what you're saying is that over and above that, there is also this personal guarantee that banks may ask for on an unsecured, I'm assuming they wouldn't ask for it on a secured loan. It would be an unsecured loan.
Banks are, and finance houses more and more are asking for personal guarantees on unsecured and secured.
And secured, okay.
Yes.
And it's quite funny when you've been saying that, because obviously with what Union do, we do actually do a lot of work with finance companies that are predominantly trying to lend out to businesses. And it's funny where the attitude sometimes has been, well, if you really think your business is that good, why are you not putting your own name down to it?
Mm.
Which is wrong, totally wrong.
Yep.
And I have seen so many businesses where they felt that they've been put in a corner to get finance to then sign a personal guarantee. And then it all comes unstuck because obviously if they don't own or the house or the bank is the first in line as a creditor and they've got other charges on the house, then the wife or the girlfriend or the husband or boyfriend own the other half, it becomes a real mess.
Yes.
So I think for the insurance world to actually have a look at this as a product is a really good idea and a really good thing because it does safeguard those that are not in the business to still have a roof over their head.
Absolutely.
So to speak. But, it's one of them things that I always say to people, don't feel pressurised in signing your life away. As long as you have a roof over your head, things can get better.
Mm.
And there are a lot of other ways of getting themselves out of that pressurised sense of signing a personal guarantee. But hearing of this news of this insurance cover is brilliant.
So, I mean, just broad brushstrokes, how are the premiums for something like that calculated?
Well, again, as I said, it depends on the type of lending, the credit score of the company, various underwriting criteria. But the rates tend to be, if it's a vanilla case, nice and simple to underwrite, 2 to 2.5% as a very
rough... Of the value of the loan?
Of the PG amount.
Mm-hmm.
And that will cover you anywhere between 60% to 80% of the PG amount. So you may have to find the remaining 20% yourself, but it's far easier to refinance your property to find 20% of a personal guarantee than 100% of a personal guarantee.
Okay, so on a £10,000 loan, for example, that you have a personal guarantee against, we're talking about you having to find £2,000 of that in the event that you defaulted on it.
Well, no, that's not. That's 20%, isn't it? No, it would be of the PG amount.
Yeah.
Oh, I see what you mean. I thought about the premium. Yeah. Then.
No.
That'd be a bit expensive.
No, and the premium would just be 2% of 8,000, I guess, would it? In that instance.
Yeah. So, 10, for example, you've got this is quite a high figure. You've got a £200,000 personal guarantee. You're looking at a premium. Again, I'm being very broad brush with this, a premium of about £4,000 a year.
Yeah.
And then if, unfortunately, the personal guarantee amount was the personal guarantee was called on, you'd have to find 40,000 rather than 200,000.
Yeah. Okay. And can these can this insurance be applied retrospectively, or does it have to be done at the time of the loan?
No, it doesn't have to be done at the time of the loan. It can be done partway or halfway through the loan. And obviously, as you are paying down that finance facility, the PG amount reduces accordingly, and therefore the insurance premium reduces accordingly.
So as long as the loan isn't in default at the time that you want to take out the insurance...
Yeah, the company's got to be solvent. Absolutely.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it?
So I've just picked up what you said, Martin, about the value, because obviously I've worked in businesses that have traded with personal guarantees for the credit limit of the sales of stocks or what have you. So if somebody's got a £200,000 personal guarantee and the company gives them £100,000 credit, but that £100,000 credit rolls to maintain their business. So there's always that guarantee in place. There's no deadline on that guarantee. Mm. How does that work out for you from your side?
Well, the insurance is always in place as long as the client renews the policy.
Mm-hmm.
It's as simple as that. Mm. You can pay on instalments. If it's cancelled midterm, you get a pro rata rebate of premium. And it just carries on. So it's a very straightforward way of administering the policy.
Bearing in mind, I do see a lot of businesses that end up being a bit tight.
Of course.
In where they're trading and everything, and they do think that this personal guarantee is a really good way to go.
Yeah.
I would advise everybody that if you actually have a personal guarantee with anybody, get that bit of paper out, review it, and have a chat with an insurance broker. Yeah. To see if that can, if that's something that they can do.
Well, I know the blog is proved very popular. So
has it? Good.
I mean, there's obviously an awful lot of people out there who, have kind of set up and had a think about it because they just weren't aware that it even existed.
And that's exactly what we're just trying to do at the moment. It's just build awareness so that then if those two words are ever used, personal guarantee, don't panic.
Think insurance.
I'll get insured against that.
Brilliant. Simon, what other? We've got sort of roughly 3 minutes left. So very quickly, what other products are out there on that kind of level, those kind of niche cyber guarantee insurance products. What else is out there, or what's coming down the pipe, do you think, that we should be aware of?
I mean, a lot of people will be aware of gap insurance. We insurance brokers tend to be a lot lower in terms of premiums than if you bought it from a main dealer. Mm-hmm. So that's good. Cover also tends to be wider, so that's always good to be aware of. Also, excess insurance. If for some reason you've got a very high excess, you can buy excess protection.
Right.
So that can work in some cases mm-hmm. for people. There's always commercial legal expenses, which a lot of people have but don't use. Mm. There are always 24-hour free legal helplines with commercial legal expenses, and people should pick up the phone and use that facility. They are paying a small premium for mm-hmm. commercial legal expenses. You know, make sure you use it.
I guess there's things like VAT investigation insurance.
That can be included within commercial legal expenses.
So all sorts of very helpful stuff out there.
Yeah,
brilliant. Simon, how do we get in touch with you to discuss our individual insurance needs? What's the kind of best way to make contact with Morpheus?
Well, depends on the person and how they want to make contact, really. But we love talking to people. If you want to call us, we're on 0800 276 1155. If you prefer to tweet us, we're at Morpheus Insure. We've got a LinkedIn company page, Morpheus Insurance Solutions.
You're on LinkedIn as well.
I'm on LinkedIn.
Simon,
I'm very
Hammond.
Happy to take messages on LinkedIn.
And you also go to the Wealden Business Group, is that right?
I do, yes, every Wednesday morning.
Which meets at the Little Silver Hotel?
Little Silver Country Hotel,
right.
St Michael's.
On the sort of Tenterden, A28 Ashford
Just
Road.
Just before Tenterden,
it?
That's yeah. right,
okay.
yes.
Okay, brilliant. So we can always pop in and meet you there. I'm sure you'd be delighted.
At 7 o'clock in the morning.
Yes, absolutely. Have an in-depth discussion about your insurance. But for now, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you for having
absolutely
me.
Absolutely brilliant. And to you, Louis, as well, for joining us today.
Thank yes, you very much. Been very informative.
And, of course, Tracy, our co-host in the absence of the big man, Brian. Tracy, you've got something coming up that I know you want to give a very quick shout-out for.
Yes, we're actually going to be delivering a credit control collections course primarily geared to bookkeepers and virtual assistants. So it's to help them help their clients, because we know that a lot of people use bookkeepers, use virtual assistants. So just to get them a bit more aware of what credit management means and also how to help their clients. Mm-hmm. So that will be on Thursday the 15th of August. It's a day's course between 9:30 and 4. It's a reduced price of £150 plus VAT, and you get a lunch as well with tea and coffee.
Brilliant.
So, yes, to get hold of us, by all means, find us on LinkedIn and Twitter, or you can email us at info@pecunia2016.co.uk.
Brilliant. And that's it. That is literally, we are out of time. Thank you so much for tuning in. Thank you to our wonderful guests.
Thank you very much.
We'll speak to you in 2 weeks' time. Thank you.
Summer holiday, no more working for a week or two. Fun and laughter on a summer holiday, no more worries for me or you. For a week or two, we're going where the sun shines brightly. We're going where the sea is blue. We've seen it in the movies. Now let's see if it's true. Everybody has a summer holiday, doing things they always wanted to. So we're going on a summer holiday to make our dreams come true for me and you. We're going where the sun shines brightly. We're going where the sea is blue. We've seen it in the movies. Now let's see if it's true. Everybody has a summer holiday, doing things they always wanted to. So we're going on a
summer holiday to make our dreams come.